Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you want to make a podcast? Spotify's got a platform that lets you make one super easily. It's called Spotify for Podcasters. It lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else podcasts are heard. Video podcasts are also available on Spotify. You know I love that. And I promise you, the other platforms don't offer that. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can also earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. And best of all, it's totally free with no catch. I've been using Spotify for Podcasters from the very start. I highly recommend you give it a try. Just don't post on Monday. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started. Welcome, everyone, to Monday Match Analysis. I'm Gil Gross. Today's episode is one of the biggest of the year. Always is, between Canada and Cincinnati. So much to get into. Congratulations to Pablo Carreño Busta for his first Masters 1000 title. I will break down his final, where he beat Hubert Hurkacz in three sets. I'm super happy for him, and I'll get more into that as well. Also, a preview of Cincinnati, quarter by quarter, as always, you know the deal, dark horses, popcorn matchups, upset alerts, quarterfinal and final weekend predictions. But first, I want to hit the U.S. Open power rankings, which are just wild. They really are. I hate them, actually. I don't like the power rankings. I don't think they look right. They're all out of whack, and I'll get into why in a moment. Here is what it looked like before last week's results were taken into account. Medvedev 1, Nadal 2, Alcaraz 3, Kyrgios 4, Berrettini 5, Tsitsipas 6, FAA 7, Sinner 8, Fritz 9, Rublev 10. And what happened last week is pretty much everyone in the gray area of the power ranking, which is from 5 to 10. Nobody did well. Nobody went deep. 5 through 10 in the power ranking, like after Kyrgios. And by the way, Alcaraz at 3, he lost early as well against Tommy Paul. So everybody lost last week. Now you have a couple guys who are outside of the power rankings, just outside the power rankings. Hubert Hurkacz, Casper Ruud, Pablo Carreño Busta, who's been in the U.S. Open power rankings or next out in the past. It's not like PCB's been, you know, off the radar on a hard court coming to the U.S. Open. No, he's made the semis there twice. In fact, I'm pretty sure last year he might have snuck in at like number 10 or something. So all these guys who are borderline guys, they all went deep. So, you know, it's tough because they weren't in the power rankings for a reason. So how much do I react to what we saw last week? Like, that's the question here. And also, with all of these guys, 5 through 10, and I talked to Nico Pereira last week about just how close they are. Like, they're all very, very close. You know, when all of them lose the first match they play or the second match they play, it's really difficult to make any progress in sorting them. So the power rankings are a mess, a total mess. Here they are. And again, I try to keep my like opinion about how they're going to do at the U.S. Open. I try to keep my opinion out of it and look at a couple of factors. What did they do last week and the week before in Washington in some cases? What have they done this season, especially on hard court? And what have they done in the past at the U.S. Open? I just try to look at the results and come out. And with young players, you need to do some extrapolation, right? You can't penalize young players because they haven't done as much at the U.S. Open. But just taking that into account, like with Alcaraz, for example, you got to take more into account what he's done this year on the hard courts. But for everyone else, or for the older players especially, those are the three factors, really. All right, here we go. Medvedev 1, Nadal 2, Kyrgios 3, Alcaraz 4. He moves down 1. So Kyrgios moves up 1 spot to 3, Alcaraz down 1 to 4. Pablo Carreño Busta enters the power rankings and comes in at number 5. Hurkacz enters the power rankings, comes in at number 6. Casper Ruud enters the power rankings and goes to number 7. Felix Auger-Aliassime comes in at number 8. Tsitsipas at number 9. Berrettini at 10. Sinner, Fritz, Rublev, and Nori are the next out. Tsitsipas moved down 3 spots, by the way, and Berrettini moved down 5 spots. Again, like, I don't even know how much I want to delve into this because it's so mushy right now in that area. All I'll say is, yeah, I just decided to reward the guys who did great last week because is there enough between, like, there are issues with Hurkacz and Ruud. They've never done well at a hardcourt major. They haven't. But they've done well at hardcourt masters. Ruud is now, you know, made the final in Miami, semifinal in Canada. Hurkacz has an incredible resume in the hardcourt masters. So you take that into account. They did great last week. Cool. You get the benefit of the doubt because your Tsitsipases and your Berrettinis and your FAAs, you know, they all have better histories at the U.S. Open. Fritz, the Indian Wells champion. Sinner is kind of an in-between guy. He doesn't have a great run at a hardcourt slam, but he's been great. You know, he looked great at Wimbledon and Umag, so I was ready to kind of pump him up here if he did well. He didn't. He lost to PCB like a lot of other guys did on this list. You know, no one's taking it by the horns, right? Andre Rublev loses to Dan Evans in the first round. I don't know. I gave it to the guys who earned it, who did well last week. Because right now, nobody's resume is really jumping out. And that's that. You have Kyrgios, who's been the star of the summer so far at number 3 in terms of results. I mean, he did beat the world number 1 last week. I know he didn't go all the way. I know he didn't make a semifinal or a final, but he beat the world number 1 last week. You have Nadal, who's obviously going to be a total force and will only get one tournament, and we'll see how he does, but he's obviously 1 or 2. And then you have Medvedev, the defending champion at the US Open, who's been the best player on hard court statistically in the last couple years. And he drew Kyrgios, who's number 3 in the rankings this week, in the second round. So he gets to kind of stay put at 1, and you chalk it up to a bad draw. That's where we're at right now, at the U.S. Open power rankings. I'll flash it up on the screen one more time just so you can take a look at it. And then I think we can move on. I don't know. We're going to learn a lot next week, and expect things to be very volatile from 4 all the way through to about Rublev. Oops, sorry about that. I expect things to be very volatile because there's just not much between any of these guys. Let us move on to the final that we witnessed in Montreal. Pablo Carreño Busta beats Hubert Hurkacz in 3 sets. 3-6, 6-3, 6-3. Extremely well-deserved. 31 years old. You don't often win your first Masters title at that age. The last person to be that old, or in this case older, before winning their first was Isner when he won Miami. And Carreño Busta is just one of the great workhorses of the tour. He is, you know, just an absolute talent maximizer. He won his first 500 last year. Hadn't won a 500 until winning in Hamburg last year, which is easy to forget. Now he wins his first 1,000 this year. Had the medal at the Tokyo Olympics last season as well. And he's going on a similar run that he went on last year. From Hamburg when he won to the Olympics when he beat Djokovic and Medvedev, and he looked incredible. And I actually picked him last year. And I totally had forgotten this. I picked him to make the final of Cincinnati last year because of how well he was playing. So this is his time of year. He's found his form again, but this run was just absolutely spectacular from Carreño Busta. Beat Berrettini, Holger Rune, Yannick Sinner, and Jack Draper all in straight sets. And honestly, most of the sets weren't close, except Draper took him to a breaker. And then he beat Dan Evans in three, and he beat Hurkacz in three. Never came close to losing a match, though. You know, there were no great escapes here. I guess that's not true, right? Because Evans... No, it is true. He never came close to losing a match. Yeah, he was never on the fence. It was a dominant week from Carreño Busta. Two-time U.S. Open semifinalist, Olympic bronze medalist. This is a guy who's has been knocking on the door. The kind of player who you can look back on his career, and a player of his caliber, you know, sometimes they have a run like this, and sometimes they retire, and you look back and you're disappointed that they never got this kind of run. So I'm glad PCB won't be in that camp. What stood out to me from a general perspective on his level, I thought he played much more aggressively on the forehand, and he was sure of himself and confident on that shot that can sometimes get tight and nervous and fail him. And he also came in way more than I've ever seen him come in. He's got skills at net. He's always a good doubles player, but for the most part, he tends to stay back unless he's absolutely sure that he's going to get an easy volley. I think he was a little bit more daring this week. I think he came in with some more reckless abandon, and ultimately he easily played a top 10 level here. And I don't know how you could have watched him this week. I don't know how you could even just look at those score lines against the caliber of player who he was beating and not agree with that statement that Carreño Busta was a top 10 level, was at a top 10 level this week in Montreal. As it pertains to the match with Hurkacz in general, I said in the preview that we would probably be sitting here tonight or today and saying either Hurkacz had a good forehand day and he won, or Hurkacz had a bad forehand day and he lost. Because at the end of the day, the match was going to play out a certain way. And with Hurkacz, that is so often the difference between a guy who is somewhat unbeatable, especially for a player who can't really match him for firepower on the serve and is not really an elite returner. You know, against that kind of player, if Hurkacz hits his forehand well, then you have yourself a player who's almost going to be impossible to beat for a Carreño Busta. Luckily for PCB, and I don't want to make it sound like Hurkacz didn't play well, or Hurkacz played below his level, but luckily for PCB, Hurkacz just didn't have that great forehand day, and it turned into a match where, like so many Hurkacz matches that he ends up losing, you point to two moments where his serve got broken because his forehand was bad, and that's why his serve got broken. He missed some first serves, the second serve returns came into court, they got into rallies, and Hurkacz's forehand wasn't good enough. And that's what happened here. You look at the second set at Love 1 with Hurkacz serving, started it with a double fault. Then he made a shot selection error, taking a forehand down the line, which he missed wide. He then tried to redirect a forehand inside out on a first ball that he caught late, and it went wide again. Missed it on the same sideline. And then he made a forehand unforced error at Love 40 once again. So double fault, three forehand unforced errors. There's the break of serve. There's the second set. Then you look at the third set. And the break comes at one all. First point of the game. Hurkacz. Oh, I actually have screenshots here to show you guys. Here's the first point of the game. This is a forehand in the middle of the court. Hurkacz has his feet set. It is the, the fourth shot of the rally. And Hurkacz just misses this long for no reason. It's just a simple trade. Now we go to 30-all. Again, Hurkacz right smack in the middle of the court with his feet set. There's nothing difficult about this ball. And Hurkacz just decelerates and buries this, not only into the net, but into the middle of the net. Now we go to 30-40, and Carreño Busta hits a return very, very safely into the middle of the court. And Hurkacz is like, crap, like I can't hit a forehand, so I'm just going to drop shot. And guess what? He misses the drop shot middle of the net. So that's three forehand unforced errors again. So three forehand unforced errors in both games. And I will mention that the other point that PCB won in this one-all game in the third set was a Hurkacz forehand drop shot that Carreño Busta got to because it wasn't well enough disguised, and PCB read it and then finished on the next ball with an overhead. So it would be, you know, I'm not going to be harsh here, and I'm just going to say three forehand unforced errors. But the other point was a forehand drop shot, and he lost the point. So in a way, you could also blame the forehand for that one. So those were the breaks of serves that gave, that put PCB out in front in both of the sets that he won. And I also thought that Hurkacz's forehand in particular really struggled for the rest of the third set. You look at the numbers overall. Forehand unforced errors, 14 for Hurkacz, 5 for Carreño Busta for the match. Those are baseline forehand unforced errors from the baseline. Then you look at average speed. I don't have it for the match, but Carreño Busta in the first set averaged 10 miles per hour faster on the forehand than Hurkacz. So it's not like we're looking at, as you guys know, we're not looking at an unforced error count, but PCB has a low-powered forehand that he rolls in and Hurkacz crushes it. It's not like that. It's not like that at all. So it just accentuates the difference in level between these two forehands, and that creates the contrast in baseline effectiveness, ground stroke effectiveness.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I said before the match in the preview that Hurkacz was going to win the unreturned serves battle, and he did. In fact, Hurkacz served great. 70% first serves in, 61% unreturned, including 18 aces. You can't ask for better than that. That is a dominant performance on first serve. Now, as soon as the return bounced in play, and this came down to the screenshots that I showed you and what I just described to you in large part, but as soon as the return was in play, PCB won 25 points, Hurkacz won 17. That is taking away all of the service winners and the aces. And it's even taking away all of the double faults as well. Every time the return landed in play, 25 to 17. Now you might be saying that you know, is okay and that should be expected because PCB is a great baseliner. Here's the problem with that. You look at what Hurkacz does on the third shot of the rally, which is the plus one ball. And that should be a shot that, based on Hurkacz's big serve, he should have great numbers on that shot. Because the big serve sets up short balls on the plus one. But Hurkacz on the third shot of the rally finished the match with 6 winners and 6 unforced errors. PCB, in comparison, 6 winners, 2 unforced errors on the third shot of the rally. You look at second serve points won, 71% for Carreño Busta, 30% for Hurkacz. This is a total mismatch off the ground. That's what it comes down to. And if you're going to beat Hurkacz, that's what you have to do to him. Now, it takes an immense amount of talent to actually dominate him to that level. Because most players on tour, even though Hurkacz may not be an elite baseliner, he's still a good baseliner with really good defense, great counterpunching, especially for his size. So, and an awesome backhand. So a lot of players still, they can't dominate Hurkacz from the baseline to that extent. They don't have what it takes. And yes, the baseline mismatch really comes down to forehand potency, forehand consistency in a big way. However, I want to reiterate that Hubie is a great counterpuncher. And Carreño Busta did an awesome job once again, as he did in the match against Dan Evans, of coming forward to finish. And I don't think that the discrepancy off the ground would have ended up being as wide had Carreño Busta not found this incredible effectiveness at net. He went 13 for 16 at net. Hurkacz, who is a net rusher, at least, you know, especially when he's playing correctly and when he's at his best, Hurkacz went 18 for 26, so a lot less efficient. And all in all, Hurkacz won only 5 more points at net than PCB did. And you'd almost think, considering the play styles, that Hurkacz would have a larger advantage in that area. So I can't say enough about, first of all, just Carreño Busta's baseline game and just how deadly it was. The depth, the consistency, the weight of shot, the angles that he came up with, the way he moved the ball around the court, the way he finished at net. And there was no blinking, you know, and that is what is so hard about playing Hurkacz. You got to think of him like a version of Daniil Medvedev, just doesn't have quite the movement and the returning and a couple of other things as well. But, you know, you're not going to break him because he has an elite serve, maybe a top 5 serve in the sport. So that's one end of things. Really tough to break him on the serve. And then on the return games, he just makes balls and moves really well. So it requires you, even if he doesn't have the best racket head acceleration or the best weight of shot from the back of the court, he's still going to make you execute over and over and over and over again. And if there's one thing that Carreño Busta was just so incredible at in this match and throughout the week, it was the solidness of his game. The fact that that loose service game never came. It just didn't come. He didn't blink. Now, in the first set, Hurkacz won this really, really long baseline rally at Laval and actually got PCB gassed. And then Carreño Busta made a couple of mistakes that came from impatience on the next 2 points because he actually didn't have his lungs. So that was impressive by Hurkacz. And then Hubie with a great second serve return, which he was not able to keep up throughout the match at all. But he got that one aggressive second serve return in to get the break at Love, actually, in the first set. So that was the difference in the first set. But that was it. No break points. No break point opportunities for Hurkacz for the remainder of the match. Just that one game in the first set. Carreño Busta did a really good job, by the way, on the body serve, jamming up Hurkacz, which made it very difficult for him to attack the second serve, especially on the ad side. Instead of going out wide, where Hurkacz is really good at taking that backhand return down the line, Carreño Busta went body very effectively. And then he pretty much went body T on the deuce side, which was also an effective strategy. So awesome performance by Pablo Carreño Busta. Let's get to the preview. Cincinnati. First of all, I want to start by shouting out some of the qualifiers. There was rain tonight in Cincy, and they had to delay the qualifying matches, at least a couple of them. Oh, now they're finished. Okay, Kakanakis won and Musetti won. So let me just tell you who the qualifiers are. I want to shout them out because I wasn't able to include them in the preview. And honestly, in these Masters 1000 draws, I find that to be very annoying when I don't see the qualifiers because they make up a large portion of the draw and they're such awesome players. considering the cutoff for these tournaments are basically like generally something like 50 in the world. All right, Jaume Munar qualified, Henry Laaksonen, David Goffin, Lorenzo Sonego, Marcos Giron, Tanasi Kokkinakis, and Lorenzo Musetti. Given the court speed in Cincy and how much offensive tennis is rewarded, I would say the guys you don't want to face, certainly Goffin, who I believe has an awesome history in Cincinnati. That's just off the top of my head. I haven't checked that, but I feel like he has had some great runs in Cincy, and the court speed is great for Goffin. Mostly him. You know, that's the name that sticks out. Kokkinakis is a great server, of course. So he's someone as well. And Munar is matchup dependent, you know? I really like the tennis that Munar is playing in 2022, but you know exactly what you're going to get from him, and it really just depends on the matchup. Let's get into quarter by quarter. Again, these are quick courts, by the way, so it's not the same as Canada. Canada is not a fast hard court. It's a medium hard court. And this is a fast hard court. So keep that in mind as I go through this. Oh, by the way, I know that I said earlier that I hate the power rankings. I also hate this draw. Hate it. But I'm not going to explain why, because that would spoil it. I'll talk about why at the end. Daniil Medvedev's quarter features Andrei Rublev, Taylor Fritz, and Grigor Dimitrov. My dark horses here are Nick Kyrgios and Tommy Paul. My upset alert is Andrei Rublev, and my early popcorn here is a lot. I couldn't pick one match. I really couldn't. This quarter is stacked with a capital S. My God. It really is. So first of all, they played a first round match and Vanda Zanschkel beat Cressy. So it could have been Medvedev versus a serve and volleyer in the second round right away for Medvedev. That would have been interesting. It's not going to be that. It's going to be Botic. You know, I think really highly of Botic, as I talked about last week. You have Tommy Paul here coming off that insane week. You have Jensen Brooksby in this quarter. You have Denis Shapovalov against Dimitrov, right? So that was a potential popcorn. Paul Brooksby is, in a way, a potential popcorn. You have Taylor Fritz against Sebastian Baez. Baez has looked, the court speed has looked like it's been way too much for him, and he hasn't been a threat at all. But Fritz is a seed, of course. Nick Kyrgios, unseeded player that nobody wants in their section. He lands in this quarter. He plays Alejandro Davidovich-Fokina in the first round. And then you have Albert Ramos-Vinolas against a lucky loser. Ramos-Vinolas, who's had a really good season, quietly. There's no fat in this quarter. There's just nowhere, there's no weak matchup. And, you know, some quarters are just chock full, like the bottom quarter here. Almost every first round match except one has a qualifier in there. This quarter has like none. It has one, and that's going to be against Albert Ramos-Vinolas. The winner takes on Rublev. So this quarter is just completely loaded. Completely loaded. Upset alert is Rublev because, and I don't feel too strongly about it, but I do think Fritz will beat Baez. I'm confident with that. Dimitrov, Shapovalov. I just feel like these courts have been a little too quick for Dennis in the past, and he's had trouble controlling the ball here. So I don't know. Like, I haven't seen Grigor play, quite frankly, in a long time. He hasn't made a lot of noise, but I have some confidence that Dimitrov comes out of that as well with his defense and his serving. So Rublev was the pick. I don't know what qualifier he will face. Obviously, Ramos-Vinolas will ask a lot of him, being a lefty, being someone who's going to kind of keep the ball on Rublev's backhand, make him create from that side, and be ultra consistent. And Rublev has just looked fragile to me, as I said last week. All right, quarterfinal prediction here is Medvedev defeats Kyrgios. Now, part of this, most certainly, is the fact that although this entire quarter is loaded, Medvedev has a lot less, I'm missing the word here, but less danger, less threats in his path. His path looks a little bit friendlier considering his highest, you know, the seed in his section is Dimitrov. Then you have, you know, Shapovalov, Tommy Paul, Brooksby, and Botic, who he'll play first up. Rublev, on the other hand, has Kyrgios, has Fritz. So as far as who is going to, sorry, I picked Kyrgios to make the quarterfinal. So Kyrgios has Fritz and Rublev. So Fritz and Rublev versus Dimitrov. Obviously, it's a little bit tougher on Nick. So that's part of why I put Medvedev through. The other thing is, look, Medvedev's a great player. He's got to make an adjustment. And I think if he mentally commits to making an adjustment, I do feel his talent will do the rest. His talent will do the rest, and he will figure out a way to counter Kyrgios's serve and volleying. We saw what happened in Australia earlier this year when Kyrgios stayed back, didn't serve and volley every point.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And Medvedev, he needs to start to take the potential adjustments that he needs to make. He needs to take that seriously. And I don't know. He's a great player. So I will put faith in him doing that. And I will move him ahead to the semifinal. I really felt, I do feel that these tournaments are just made for him. And he's played really well at Cincinnati in the past. Tsitsipas is the number 4 seed. In his quarter is Hurkacz, Berrettini, and Schwartzman. I will say right now, this Tsitsipas quarter and then the other quarter in the middle, the Alcaraz quarter, to me, those are kind of, these are the weaker quarters in this draw. You know, something has to give when you have that stacked top quarter. Something has to give. My dark horses here are Brandon Nakashima and Seb Korda. Korda picked up a couple of wins in D.C. to end a really, really difficult stretch. Huge offensive weapons, a lot of firepower off the ground, so he's dangerous. But sometimes he's going to make 40 unforced errors. So I don't know, like, which quarter do you get? That's the question. I don't have tons of faith in him, but I do have some. Nakashima's good on a lightning quick court. His serve is underrated. His backhand is a gem. He's improved the forehand. His volleying is fantastic. He actually has really good offensive instincts. So he is someone who is had a really awesome run at Wimbledon. And I'm quite high on Brandon Nakashima in general. And he's got a great little section of the draw here. Aslan Karatsev, round 1. And then the winner of Schwartzman and Alex Molchan, two players who would rather be playing this matchup on clay, with all due respect, especially the speed of this hard court will not suit either of them. So I really love the position that that Nakashima is in this part of the draw. And for Seb Korda, he will take on Karen Khachanov in round 1, rematch of that ridiculous Wimbledon match that they played last year. And then he'll take on the winner of Berrettini Tiafoe. My upset alert is Stefanos Tsitsipas. He will take on the winner of Dan Evans, who had such a great week last week, and Filip Krajinovic, who makes you earn everything. Krajinovic beat Tsitsipas last year in Hamburg. And he is not a player you want to play, Krajinovic, if you are not at your best. If you're at your best, you're going to beat him. You know, he's never going to take the racket out of your hand, ever. And he's just going to make you play well. But if you don't play well and you make a lot of errors, which Tsitsipas has recently, you could be in trouble. And these courts are a little quick. Now, Tsitsipas has made the semifinal of Cincinnati twice, which sort of surprises me. Again, just based on the speed of the courts and the trouble that we've seen Tsitsipas have when the speed has been ratcheted up to this level. But he still is on upset alert, just looking shaky at the moment, and doesn't have a particularly kind draw in the winner of Evans Krajinovic. If you are asking me to make a prediction here, though, I actually don't think Tsitsipas will be upset. I think of all the seeds, he's the one I want to put on upset alert. I will address my popcorn match, my early popcorn match, Berrettini versus Tiafoe. I do think Berrettini's going to win it. I think Tiafoe has a good return offensively. I think against the biggest servers in the world, he really does get aced a lot and tends to guess, do a lot of guessing. I just don't think he makes a lot of returns against great servers. So to me, that bodes well for this round one matchup with Berrettini. It is my early popcorn match, though. I'm excited to see that one. That could be a really exciting and high-level match. Quarterfinal, Hurkacz defeats Tsitsipas. Again, I do think this is a weaker section in terms of players who can challenge the top seeds. When it comes to Hubie, I don't love someone coming off of a final last week. You know, the fatigue factor is there, but we've seen Hurkacz do well in these kinds of situations, at least in the Sunshine Double. And again, these are his conditions. Best of three sets on a hard court. This hard court is particularly fast, and it should reward his serve. And I like his draw. The winner of Benjamin Bonzi and John Isner in his first matchup. I think it's huge for him that he has a bye to get some extra rest. That will be and should be a key for him. And I just don't think, you know, between Berrettini, who obviously could be a tough one, and that would just be tiebreaks, you know, Khachanov in there, Korda in there. I just think Hurkacz is definitely my choice here to come through. And then if he ends up playing Stefanos Tsitsipas, I think that's a great matchup for Hurkacz between the way he serves and how much difficulty Stefanos will almost certainly have dealing with that. And then that righty-to-righty, backhand-to-backhand pattern that I think Hurkacz will really fancy himself. You know, the depth and the penetration and the flat ball that Hurkacz brings with his backhand cross court is a ball that we've really seen Tsitsipas struggle to handle in the past against similar opponents like Daniil Medvedev. It's just, it doesn't bring the best out of Tsitsipas's backhand if he does make it as far as the quarterfinal. Moving on to Carlos Alcaraz's quarter, the number three seed. The top seeds here are Casper Ruud, Cameron Norrie, and Marin Cilic. My dark horse here is Emil Roussevori. Ran into the eventual finalist last week. Ran into Hubert Hurkacz. Played a very respectable three-setter with him and lost. But I still maintain that Roussevori is just about ready to break through with a big result. And he is my dark horse once again, as he has been rewarded with, I believe, a more favorable draw than... His draw is kind of tough. JJ Wolf, hometown kid, first round. I could have made that the popcorn match, but I didn't. Upset alert is Casper Ruud. This court speed makes things a little bit tougher. Canada is not only a slower hard court, it is a high bouncing hard court, which really did reward Ruud's forehand. I just don't see Cincinnati as being as favorable for Casper. So upset alert among all of these seeds. I'm not convinced that Casper's going to go out. Ben Shelton, the lefty wild card from the United States. Ruud sometimes does have trouble with these lefties who serve well to hit Casper's backhand. Or a qualifier/lucky loser. So I'm not really sure. And that's what kind of makes it hard for Ruud. But I have him on upset alert here mostly because I don't think this court is as kind to him as Canada. Early popcorn, Murray Wawrinka. Look, at a certain point, Andy Murray needs to stop getting the early popcorn match. At a certain point, that's going to happen. But it's not this time. Not this time. Playing another legend. It is the battle of the... I don't know what to call it. That toxic argument where some people think that Stan is as good as Andy, where like zero statistics in the world back that up except for total majors won. Literally the only stat that you can possibly find that has Stan on Murray's level. I love Stan. I mean, all with, you know, full respect, incredible, nothing but love, but his career isn't on the level of Andy Murray. All right, here comes my quarterfinal prediction. It is Marin Cilic defeats Casper Ruud. Yeah, I don't go with Alcaraz here. First of all, part of this is this. I've been too chalky, and I just got to break things up a little bit because the tour in these Masters events, they haven't been chalky at all. They've been pretty crazy, actually. I mean, Miami was nuts. Francisco Cerúndolo made a semifinal. Ruud made the final. People didn't expect that, really, although it wasn't absolutely stunning. And then we know the bottom half. You know, we just had a Carreño Busta versus Dan Evans semifinal in a Masters 1000. So things have been really chalky, and I just want to break that up. So I feel like Marin Cilic, given the level of tennis that he has shown at times in 2022, his offensive mindset, his serving, and his aggressive returning, I think, and his history at Cincinnati, which is good, I'm gonna give the nod to Marin here and put him through to the semifinal. Alcaraz will need to serve well against Cilic because Cilic, if you miss your spot on the serve, he's one of the few men on tour who will actually just try to hit a winner. He'll be like, "Oh, you missed your spot on the serve? Cool, I'm gonna hit a winner." Yeah, that's how I'm gonna do this. So I think it's kind of a rough matchup for Alcaraz because it really challenges his spot serving. You know, you have to hit your spots against Cilic. You really do. And as you can see, despite Ruud being on upset alert, look, I know I've done this two quarters in a row. I'm not really predicting him to lose, you know, against Ben Shelton or qualifier, who I don't even know who it's going to be. I would just temper expectations. By the way, though, Rude's seed is Cam Nori, right? Ruud owns Nori. It's an awful matchup for Cam. Cam's cross-court backhand just doesn't work because Ruud is so good from a low contact point on the forehand because he gets the ball up and down so well, which is a huge problem. And even Cam kind of struggles to rush Casper on the backhand because his forehand is obviously a little bit more loopy, and Casper just, he's unbothered by that heavy topspin on the cross court forehand. It's an awful matchup, and Ruud has handled him. So that's another reason why, even though I'm not feeling great about Ruud in these conditions, I'll still get him to the quarterfinal because he's got a seed who, you know, he doesn't have any really dangerous unseeded players. And then the seed that he does have is someone who he plays great against. We move on to the number two seed. Rafael Nadal is back. And in his quarter is Felix Auger-Aliassime, Jannik Sinner, and Roberto Bautista Agut. Look, I know I said that the top quarter was stacked, but as far as seeds go, this quarter stacked. RBA, really good on fast hard courts. Really good. So tough. Jannik Sinner. Felix, who's these conditions will suit him a lot better than Canada. And Rafa. The seeds are incredible. Now, what about the unseeded players? I don't really know because they're all qualifiers. Like, all of the qualifiers got placed in this. My dark horse here is Alex de Minaur. Lightning quick hardcourt. Yeah, this is his jam. This is his jam, really. We see him do super well in Atlanta. Won the title twice there. It helps his spot serving. He gets forward. It helps him be more potent on the backhand, where slow courts just the ball kind of checks because he hits it so flat, and that happens on his forehand too. So Demon Or is a dark horse. My upset alert is Felix Auger-Aliassime. I don't feel all that strongly about that, but here's the thing with Felix. And again, I like the conditions here for Felix. It's just emotionally, that was a lot last week. There's no doubt about it. The highs were extremely high, and I think the lows were probably extremely low. And I'd prefer if, like, I do think that he'll play Cincinnati well in his career, but I have a feeling he's going to have to gain some more experience before he does that. And it would be better if you were coming from Toronto. I just feel like Montreal is another level, and I think we could have some mental and emotional hangover. Not to mention Demon Or. Alex Demon Or could be his first match. So there's no easing into this for FAA. By the way, they've never played on tour level. Last time they played was Challengers. So I don't really know what that matchup even looks like. Early popcorn, Nadal versus Borna Coric in a potential round two. Now, Coric has to get through a qualifier in round one, but how great would that be? I feel like it's been a long time. Although Borna Coric has been back and we've seen him and, you know, he's been around. I feel like it's been a long time since he's really been in the spotlight on a center court. I can remember maybe one match where I feel like there were a lot of eyes on him, and I'm blanking on what exactly it is. But it'll be great to see Borna Coric challenge himself against an elite player once again. And by the way, he always played Federer extremely well. I'm pretty sure he played I'm pretty sure he has a win over Murray. He always kind of rose to the occasion in these kind of matchups. So that is your early popcorn. In the quarterfinal, Rafa Nadal defeats Jannik Sinner. I do feel good about Jannik Sinner right now, just in general. The loss against Karina Busta, I guess, could be chalked up to just running into a buzzsaw. And these quick conditions for Sinner, I don't hate it. You know, it'll obviously, I don't love it either for him. You know, it's kind of neutral, but he returns so well that that can be an asset on these kinds of courts, certainly, that he won't be disrupted and bothered by the pace of the serve. That's always a good thing. Right now, I'm not going to bet against Rafa. I feel like he's taken every precaution to really be ready. He's strongly considered playing Canada, which makes me think he's going to be even more ready for this. And man, we know what he's done coming off of injury this year. He has won. So you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. And I did the same in the final weekend. Here it is. Medvedev defeats Hurkacz in three sets. Nadal defeats Cilic in two sets. Nadal defeats Medvedev in three sets. Here is why I hate this draw. Because, well, you know, we didn't see Medvedev-Hurkacz last week, but we could see Medvedev-Kyrgios again. We could see Kyrgios-Hurkacz again. Like, we just saw this. It feels like all the big servers are clumped up on the at the top there, and I like it when big servers play not big servers, and at least you get the contrast. You know, and then I have no complaints about the bottom half, other than the fact that Nadal's quarter does feature some players that I could have been very, very high on, and I could have moved through to the semifinal, which, you know, it happens. It happens in every draw. No complaints. But ultimately, I'm just going to roll with Rafa. I think in 2022, when he's healthy, that's been the way to go. Things have not been great at Cincinnati for him as of late. He did... let me actually look up the history real quick of Nadal in Cincinnati so that I can refresh myself. I know it's been a while. I know it's been a while since he's done well here. It has been since He won it in 2013, which was, I think he beat John Isner in that final, huh? Yes, he beat John Isner in that final. Since then, third round, quarterfinal. Hasn't played it since 2018. But another reason why I like Nadal this week, he is he got there early. He's getting used to the conditions. He's getting used to the balls. And that should pay some dividends as well. I'm just more confident in him also making the final than I am anyone else here. You know, Medvedev has a terrible draw, potentially has to face Kyrgios. Hurkacz is a terrible matchup for him in the semifinal. And then for Rafa, I think it is a lot kinder, despite the fact that I think Felix on this court, if he gets through the early goings, if he's playing his best tennis and it's in a quarterfinal, I think that can be very difficult. Sinner is very difficult for him. Ultimately, I roll with Rafa Nadal. Coverage again in Cincinnati will be pretty comprehensive, I am happy to say, and I look forward to that. Hope you enjoyed this. Don't forget to subscribe, and I will see you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.